Hello and welcome to episode 156 of Speak Be Steve for July 24th, 2022. I'm Amy.
I'm Anne.
And I'm Marjolaine.
And it's July! Hey, oh my god, I just realized we're really close to this screenplay coming out, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When does that come out? Is it the end of the month?
Yeah, I think it would be out. I think it's the 19th that it's out.
Oh man. Oh.
Yeah, so, dear listener, you are already reading the screenplay, I guess. But yeah, for us, we still have to wait.
Just three more days of time of recording.
And this time I will have it on the day of the release because I can have the ebook or anything.
Nice.
I think I will get the ebook for this one because the cover is not, it would not fit the first two. So
yeah.
I don't think I need the, yeah.
Which I'm still bitter about. Yeah, they're messing up my bookshelf aesthetic.
Well, something we are not bitter about, something in fact that we love, is the support of this week's Speak BC Patreon supporter, Lucinda A. Thank you so much for your support. We literally could not do this without you.
Yay!
Thank you, Lucinda.
And I guess it's time for the Phoenix Register.
Yeah, think so.
And now a message from our sponsors.
Hey you, yes you, the magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as $1 a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind-the-scenes features. But wait, there's more. Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wigs Knees. And how?
Yeah, not a lot of news this week. But the first one is really, really nice for once. And because it's the first award for Secrets of Dumbledore.
Yay!
And it's Jude Law, of course.
Of course, of course. It's Jude Law.
Who wins Best Actor at the National Film Awards for his portrayal of Albus Dumbledore, of course. And yeah, so I looked, what was this ceremony? Because I wasn't sure. And yeah, so it's the National Film Academy in the UK that hosts this award ceremony. And they have the public voting for the award. So it's not, it's a mix of a jury, a professional jury, and public voting. So
cool. Okay.
He definitely deserves this award. For
oh,
sure.
Oh, yeah, he's phenomenal.
Yeah. And he had quite a competition. I think he had Ben Whishaw. He had other great actors in the nominees. So, yeah, that's a nice win. And it's really sweet to have recognition for the movie after all the press around the bad numbers,
mm-hmm,
box office.
Yeah. Some positive press.
Even if you think everything else about the movie is bad, then you can't deny that Jude Law knocks it out of the park.
Yeah. And I was thinking about if another actor could win a prize for the movie, but I think I would give it to Jude Law because Dumbledore is really present during the movie and and yeah, he goes through a lot of emotions and subtlety. I don't know. I think it's well deserved.
Yeah. This was definitely his movie.
Oh yeah.
Series,
like,
for sure.
It may be a Fantastic Beasts movie, but it's definitely becoming more Dumbledore heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And another good news is that we have the first, not numbers, but at least performance of the release for the DVD and Blu-ray in the US.
Because a we little still mad don't about have that, Marjo.
We still have a good month to wait. Still for the release here. So yeah, but yeah, for you, it was released in June 28th, and immediately for the last week of June, it topped the sales chart for Blu-ray and DVD. So yeah, good sales.
Yeah,
I was really surprised. I didn't think people still bought Blu-rays and DVDs anymore, but I guess they do.
I mean, we don't have numbers. We just know that it's the best sales from. So we don't.
Oh,
know.
So then it could have just been me buying it in Gurnee, and like that's it. I made it number one because literally nobody else bought any Blu-rays last week.
It's possible. Oh my
gosh. When I went to go get my copy, I had to laugh because there was this guy there who was also buying them, and he was buying like multiple. I was like, what the heck? Like, why are you stacking up on these? And he was like wearing our local university shirt. And I like asked him, I was like, three copies? You know, me being nosy, right? And he was like, oh yeah, like my office sent me down to go get them for everybody. Okay, cool. I want to work where you work.
So it's number one because of that guy.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, but I think for a movie like that, they add a lot of bonus content in the Blu-ray, especially. So I get why people are still buying. And not, I mean, all the fans want the bonus content. So even if we can find them on YouTube, because I already watch most of them, even if I don't have the Blu-ray yet. So
okay, I mean, not to like flex on the people who don't have the Blu-ray yet or whatever, but I tried to watch them on YouTube, and I the quality wasn't great, and I couldn't watch it without the words, like without the closed captioning. So
I think too, for this fandom in particular, I feel like we as fans like physical copies of things. Like, I think that's a very, like, Potter, Fantastic Beasts world thing where we're just like, oh, yes, give us the physical copy of everything.
Yeah, because we're a book fandom, first and foremost.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's, like, the generation, too. I feel like us as millennials sort of... That's like our thing. We grew up with all the physical stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah. And for us in France, obviously, the sales would be good because it's not available in any streaming services. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
but
true.
We'll see next month.
Stay tuned for an update.
And that's it for the news because, yeah, the last one that I want to mention is the screenplay being just out for everyone, so but we will talk about it probably in the next episodes because we want to cover what's inside, but we don't know yet.
Yeah, like I wonder if there's going to be like any extra bonus content or just clarification.
Yeah, they say that we will have some making of stuff in the screenplay, so we'll have more than just the text.
So. Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay, well, now we do also have some owls coming our way.
Oh, they seem to have heavy parchment.
They do, guys. Big envelopes. So our first piece of owl post is from Diskid. This is, I believe, in response to episode 150. Wait, this is 156, 154, the one with Chris on it. And so that they submitted to the website, speakbeastie.com, which you can also do. You can leave a Discus comment. Quote, the fact that they don't use the Chilin anymore has me curious as to why. Is it because people felt like it wasn't fair because they got no say in the election? Or is it because Grindelwald is not the first person known to bewitch one to rig the election? I'm sure he's not the first person to try it, even if the others weren't caught previously. Speaking for myself, I would like a say in the Wizarding World elections, but we also know that people lie. They can make false promises, they can manipulate people, and can even hurt people once given power. The Qilin would help ensure we're not accidentally electing somebody who is too dangerous for office. Maybe allow the people to vote every election on whether to use the Qilin at all. And if they do, still allow people, the public, to vote for the candidate, but see if the Qilin bows to the winner as a precaution. And if the Qilin doesn't, have a revote. And if the public says no, they don't want a Qilin that year, well, then they just don't want a Qilin that year. It can be a vote they decide every election, especially if they said no one year and got a bad leader. Seems like a fair but cautious enough way to hold a vote to me. Though I would be open to other ideas as different people have a different idea of fairness. Of course, we would need people there testing the Qilin for bewitchments, as I have no doubt Grindelwald wouldn't be the first person to bewitch a Qilin. Honestly, though, you'd think in the Wizarding World they would have plenty of precautions when it comes to cheating. They seem to have it at Hogwarts. I would think in an election it would be much needed.
Yeah, I think the main reason why they don't have a Qilin every election is because the Qilin doesn't show up every time.
Yeah.
So I think it's really rare that a Qilin appear, and it only appears when, I don't know, the Qilin wants to show the world a very worthy leader, something like that. At least it's what it's said in the mythology in China, I think what we found when we did some research. But I think it's just that the Qilin is not showing up every time.
Yeah, well, I mean, also, and we don't know how long they live, so
that's true.
Or we even like where they go once they bow, and then they just go back to Ta Lo or whatever, you know.
We also haven't seen another election for Supreme Mugwump, so we don't really know if they still use them or not. Do we even know how often an election is for Mugwump?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Let me see if there's anything on the wiki.
I think, too.
I don't think so.
I always, always.
Every day, all the time.
Only been
constantly
out for what? A few months. Since the movie came out, I was kind of under the impression that the Qilin wasn't necessarily the deciding factor, that people still voted, but that this was kind of just like a indication of who might be a good choice.
Yeah, I think that's what we suggest in our discussion with Chris. I agree. I think that's, I don't want to repeat what I said, even if I don't remember exactly what I said. But if they decided to be a democracy, in quote, because I'm not sure the Wizarding World is a democracy, but they have to accept that they have to vote, and with voting, there is a risk of fraud, there is a risk of lies, and promises not kept, but that's the game of democracy. So
and especially if, like you said, Qilins don't appear that often, it's not like they can rely on this as the only form to decide an election. They would still have to vote.
And I mean, also, Qilins are supposed to only appear before the election, or I get the appearance, I should say, of a phenomenal, like, once in a generation leader, right? Or once in a... So, I mean, and we don't know anything about Santos. So unless it specifically appeared to bow to Dumbledore.
Yeah, it's weird. It doesn't, yeah. the fact that it bows to two different people in the election, it's weird. And she accepts that Dumbledore said, oh, thank you, but no. So it's weird.
Okay, and as far as how often the elections happen, there's nothing on the wiki.
Okay.
So I wonder if it's just like whenever they feel like it.
Whenever someone's like, yeah, I'm done, I'm going to retire now.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like Fogel was ready to retire, but yeah. He was just not good enough, and they decide to have another one.
They're like, I don't know. You seem like you're probably consorting with dark wizards.
So let's get an even worse wizard in here.
Let's get a dude who looks exactly like you and is even worse. Excellent. Cool. Our other piece of owl post is from Jerry. And this is an addendum to the one that she sent and we read on last... I can't even keep things straight anymore. Was it the last episode we talked about?
Yes,
that? I think it was.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
So Jerry says via email, quote, second owl post to you, but I have to add to the one I sent, I believe, yesterday. I watched some of the bonus material. Look at this beautiful segue. On the Blu-ray of Secrets of Dumbledore and on one about the German Ministry of Magic, David Yates says 1932 Berlin, so that sets the date. And the deleted scenes have some great stuff. In particular, the second one with Theseus taking care of Newt and playing with the Chilin. Lots of brotherly bonding and they sing a song together. I think it might be my favorite scene from the movie and they didn't even include it. It reminded me of the sisterly bonding and singing in Newt's suitcase scene from the first FB movie, also deleted.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. It looks like Jerry knew what would be our main discussion.
Yeah, she was peeking into the future.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to say too much about this because we are going to talk about these scenes in a little bit.
Yeah.
But
the date, yeah.
Yeah, I do want to say, like, when I was watching the deleted scenes downstairs, and when David Yates does say 1932 Berlin, I just yelled, "Vindication!" And Chris is like, "What?"
I mean, it makes sense. And that's what we had been told it was going to be prior to the movie coming out, was mm-hmm. the 30s. So, I mean, it's nice to have that confirmation, finally.
Yeah, I just wish someone had told Lolly.
Right? Awkward.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know where the mistake came from. I don't know if it was in the script that Lolly's quote was... it wouldn't surprise me since it's... Rowling and Clovis, but also Rowling writing it. And she might, yeah, still don't be good at math, but
I'm real curious what that's actually going to say in the screenplay as mm-hmm. far as that line. What mm-hmm. if we get any context that's just like Lally doesn't know what dates are or whatever.
I mean, is it possible that that was even an ad-libbed portion of that line? Maybe the actual line reads something else, but they kept that take?
It's possible. Like, I don't want to discount anything, but I feel like at this point, if Rowling and Cloves and the editors and the director don't know their fan base mm-hmm. and don't know that they're going to take a throwaway line in book two... and figure out an entire timeline from that,
yeah,
then they need to think more carefully about their takes.
They are underestimating us.
Yes.
Okay, well, that is a perfect transition into our main discussion, because we are going to talk about all of the deleted scenes included on the Blu-ray DVD, which you can also find on YouTube. They're out there.
And there will be a link in the show notes.
Mm-hmm. So the first scene, I'll just go through them all in order here. The first one we get on the DVD is the Hogwarts Owlery scene. And a brief recap is it starts off on the exterior of Hogwarts. And you hear McGonagall saying, "One of the first years found the owl in question circling the Quidditch pitch. He was apparently disoriented. Dumbledore says it's traveled a very long way." And then we see inside the owlery, Dumbledore is removing a note from the owl's leg. In Newt's voice, we hear what the note says, and it simply says, "I found her," which obviously means the Chilin. So McGonagall says, "Good news," and Dumbledore says, "Promising." And then Dumbledore says they should give the owl a sugar cube, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, and McGonagall's very weird about it. She's like, "One mm-hmm. sugar cube." Like, why are you regulating the owl's diet?
Like, what is this? Rations? Oh, wait, actually, maybe. No, we're not to the war yet. Never mind.
Yeah, we're not World War II yet. And that's Dippet, isn't it? That's with McGonagall and Dumbledore, you think?
Oh, I don't
think. Oh, maybe.
Dippet is the...
He's the groundskeeper before Hagrid.
Is it Dippet?
No, you're right. It's not Dippet. Oh, God bless it. What's his name?
Dippet was the headmaster, I think.
Yes.
I don't remember the name.
But... Kettleburn? No. That's the...
That was Caramagical
Creatures. Caramagical Creatures.
I don't remember, but I'm not sure because the name that we don't remember, it was the one during Molly and Arthur's years, much later. But we have Dumbledore and McGonagall, so why not?
But we'll see it more in the next scene, but I just think it's interesting that some of the deleted scenes that they cut out seem to set up the Chilean bit mm-hmm. a little more. And those are things that they cut, which watching the film, they kind of, I don't know that they needed this scene, but they did need more stuff to set this up.
This one for all of the scenes seemed the less interesting. And I understand why it was cut. That's, mm-hmm. I was just picking that we see Minerva witness most of Dumbledore's plotting because it added to the scene where we see Minerva coming to the Hogshead. So we know in the movie that Minerva knows some things that Dumbledore is doing, but in this scene we clearly see that she doesn't know. Dumbledore doesn't explain anything to her, which is not surprising, but because that's what he do. But but yeah, except that, I don't think that's a very interesting scene.
No, not really. It's not very long either.
Yeah,
but it's I thank you for the transcript of the dialogue that I can't understand without the subtitle on YouTube.
Like, it's hard, right?
So yeah, I was at the opening dialogue. I was listening to it, and I didn't know if I missed something or without the transcript of that, because I was, what are they talking about? I understand with the following of the scene, but the first, okay, they're talking about the Quidditch pitch, but that's the only thing I understand.
Because you can't, like, read their mouths or anything because mm-hmm. we don't see them. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the next scene is a lot more substantial. And this is the one that Jerry was referencing in the Owl post. So this is inside Newt's house. So the scene opens with Newt waking up in a hammock in a forest-like setting. His hand is bandaged up. And he walks out of the quote-unquote room, and you see that he's actually in the basement of his house. He walks upstairs to find Theseus rocking the baby Chilean in his arms, which is adorable.
Oh my god, it's the cutest thing!
And Theseus says, I don't know what got into her. I thought I had her good and settled. And then Theseus comments that Newt's got a nasty scrape and it needs changing. He lays the Chilean down on a blanket. And Pickett also has a bandaged arm, which is adorable, even though the CGI is not finished.
Yeah.
Pickett was like this little, like, two-dimensional green guy. Theseus goes and gets Essence of Dittany from Newt's suitcase. And he says, I was trying to recall the last time that I was here, referring to Newt's house.
Yeah, and he says something like, I was trying to look cool, something like that.
And he goes ahead and pours the essence of Dittany over Newt's hand, and he asks, do you know what it is then about the Chilean? Newt, being Newt, ignores that question completely. And he says instead, exactly how is it that you came to be here? Theseus says, Dumbledore asked that I pop by and look in on you. Very mysterious about it, too. I don't suppose you'd like to tell me what the two of you are up to. And again, Newt doesn't answer. And Theseus says, no, of course you don't. And Newt says, you know Dumbledore is... Theseus says, full of secrets. ba-dump. Like you.
That's why his hair is so big. It's full of secrets.
And that's the name of the movie. You.
And Theseus says, she's a Chilean, isn't she? And then there's this really cute exchange of Newt saying, she's not. And Theseus saying, she is. She's not. She is. It goes back and forth a little bit. Finally, Newt admits that she is a Chilean. And Theseus says, what are you doing with a Chilean, Newt? Or is she another one of your secrets? And Newt says, yes, and you mustn't tell anyone that you've seen her. I'm quite serious, Theseus. Theseus agrees, and then Newt wants to know how he got the Chilean to settle down for him. Theseus sang him a song that their mom used to sing, and it was a drinking song about an old muggle that fell in a well. And I tried to transcribe what I could understand of it. The words are, there once was a muggle who fell in the well. Along came a witch who did do him a spell. When the muggle did wake, he did not know what to tell. Is it heaven I'm in, or did I go straight to? And they cut off, but obviously the last word is probably heaven. Oh no. Newt comments that Chilans don't usually consent to human contact unless they, quote, sense an affinity. And Theseus says, and she senses an affinity with you, does she? Newt says, yes. Theseus says, well, then you, there you have it. We are brothers after all, Newt. End cute. Scene.
So cute.
So yeah. This seems to me like it would have been Theseus's entrance into the film instead of the train scene.
Yeah.
Which I like this a lot better.
Same.
Yeah, it really gives us a side of Theseus that we don't otherwise see.
Yeah.
Where he's being kind of nurturing, and we see that he and Newt are related. They do have stuff in common.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree, because it was our introduction to Theseus in Crimes of Grindelwald that he's a hugger. He hugged his brother and yeah, we don't have that at all in Secrets of Dumbledore. So,
mm-hmm.
And it's a crime that they cut a scene where we have Colm and Eddie singing.
<That's>, agreed.
I mean, they've always played up the differences between Newt and Theseus. Mm-hmm. And I like these little moments like this one where you find the commonalities. And I like that Theseus is pointing them out, like almost like trying to tell Newt, look, like we are slightly different, but we're brothers and I still value you and we still have these things in common. So we're not like as different as you think we are.
We're not as different as you want us to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And mentioning their mother and mentioning in Theseus mentioning that he already know the case and already visited it. And I don't know, it creates more history between the two brothers. And
Yeah. I also really liked the shot in this scene where Theseus was reaching in the case.
That is so cool.
The essence of Dittany. It was really cool because you see, like, the camera is down inside the case and you just see this expanse of, like, shelves and stuff going all the way up and he's, like, rooting around in it. I thought that was cool.
Yeah. And you mentioned Piquet, and I love how Piquet is trying to have some some help with his arm and nobody took care of him.
Oh, sweet little boy.
I love that, like, it's the same arm as Newt's that's bandaged.
He's like, me too, daddy, me too.
It's like when you're a little kid and you go to the hospital and they, like, give you a teddy bear and, like, bandage up the same arm.
Yeah. I wonder if Piquet is actually armed or if he just put a bandage to be like Newt. Look, I have the same.
He's hurt, but it's like a different arm.
I could see him doing it for the attention. This one.
But yeah, if we can have more of Theseus being adorable with baby animals in the next movie, like, just a 15-minute scene, I don't think it's too much to ask.
I know. What the heck? I thought his comment about, like, I was trying to remember the last time I was here is interesting. Why, like, from what we've seen of them so far in the movie, it's like, yes, Newt seems like more standoffish about having a relationship with Theseus, but Theseus seems like he really cares about Newt and is there for him. Why does he not go visit Newt more often?
Well, I mean, I think it's, he meant the last time I was in the case, right? It's not like...
Yeah.
Oh, I thought he meant the last time like he was in the house.
Yeah, for no, the case too, because it's when he's trying to find the determine, so...
Yeah, so I feel like he probably doesn't get in there, which makes sense because I feel like Newt really very rarely invites people into the case.
Hmm. Yeah, and he travels a lot, so I can understand how Theseus is not visiting him often because he never know where his brother is. And that's also what Newt is implying when he said to his brother, why are you here? How did you get... I mean, you have my address, okay, but how do you know that I'm home?
that's
a weird question to ask.
Yeah. I think in addition to setting up the brotherly relationship here, this scene, like I was saying earlier, helps to set up the Chilin because... Without some of these extra scenes and extra references to it, it does kind of feel like it just is there and you're like, okay, what's going on with this little guy?
You're right. It does feel more like, without these scenes, it feels more like a MacGuffin.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when we get these scenes, we learn more about it as a character and get to know it better.
Like, little lines just like the, you know, they don't usually allow people to touch them unless they sense an affinity. Like, little, like, tidbits that are dropped that just kind of make it make more sense and make it fit more.
Yeah.
Even though I now own the movie on Blu-ray, I still haven't had a chance to rewatch it. Remind me, is it in the scene where they're at the bar, is it Theseus or Aberforth that's playing with the Chilin?
It's Aberforth.
Okay.
Who's trying to feed the shilling, but after it's Jacob who plays with the...
Jacob, okay. Yeah. So cute.
Yeah. All the men are playing with the shilling.
I mean, in my experience, like, dudes try to be all manly, but if you get them around, like, a puppy or a kitten or something, they're just going to go to pieces. So this tracks.
Yeah. But speaking of the hogshead, that makes me... think of the scene that the introduction scene of Theseus is not in the train, but it's in
Hogsmeade.
So if we add this scene, it means that when they are meeting Dumbledore, Theseus know more about what's happening, because it adds for him the shilling part that they don't mention at all when they are together with Dumbledore, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
So maybe it would be... maybe they recut the scene in Hogsmeade when they decided to not keep this scene, because it seems weird that that Theseus will not mention the shilling at all.
Yeah, that makes more sense, too, because it's like they left Newt's house together to go to Hogsmeade. All right. Well, the next scene we have is a very strange one.
Totally weird.
I'm glad it was cut, because what the heck is this? So we see Dumbledore walking through the streets of Berlin. He's being followed by someone who, the title of this deleted scene is Credence Kills Auror. So that tells us that someone who's following Dumbledore is an Auror, even though there's zero indication of that within the scene itself. Credence turns up in an alley
and kills the Auror with a killing curse, and we see the green light and the Auror crumple to the ground behind Dumbledore, who we're seeing from the front. His face realizes what happened, and he turns around and sees the body and Credence. They just sort of stare at each other, and then Dumbledore walks away. So, why was the Auror following Dumbledore in the first place? That's my first question.
Yeah. And it's such a weird reaction from Dumbledore.
It is, because, yeah. Like, Credence literally just murked this guy.
Yeah.
And Dumbledore's like, this is fine.
Not my problem. I gotta cross the street.
I need to get some curry burst. Excuse me.
But this looks like it's the same general location as the Deluminator multi-dimension You're a Dumbledore scene. Mm-hmm. So do we think this takes place before, or maybe it takes place after that little showdown thing and Credence is sort of taking out his frustrations on the Auror?
Yeah, I'm really confused. At first, I was pretty sure it was before the duel, but it makes Dumbledore's reaction very, very weird. Mm-hmm. But now that you suggest it, it might be after. I'm not sure it makes more sense, but yeah, I was thinking the Auror is maybe probably working for the German ministry. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. trying to arrest Dumbledore, because we know that they arrest Theseus on the other part of the scene. It's the same time that they arrest Theseus, right? I think so.
It is. Yeah. I think they arrest Theseus maybe that evening?
Yeah, Theseus because is arrested at the event.
Yeah.
The event where Credence comes and Grindelwald know that he failed to...
Oh, you're right. Okay, so they arrest Theseus after the duel.
Mm-hmm. So probably Credence knows that the Auror is trying to arrest Dumbledore. So if it happens after the duel, maybe Credence is helping, in quote, Dumbledore. his weird way to... say, we are family, I accept that, so you're welcome. I mean,
yeah. Credence is a weird dude, so...
Don't worry, Uncle Albie, I got you.
Yeah.
It is weird that... I mean, I guess the only thing I can think of is that maybe Vogel was having Dumbledore followed, not necessarily to arrest him, but like as a person of interest. Mm.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, because he is of interest to Grindelwald, so therefore he would be of interest to Vogel.
Or is it the British Ministry of Magic still following him after what we saw from the last film?
Possible.
Yeah. We don't have any mention of that, but yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I thought it was before, too. I kind of got the feel, for me at least, I got the feeling that Credence was like, no, I'm the one who's going to kill you. I'm not going to let some Auror do it. But I don't know. I kind of like the theory that Credence is doing his best to reach out in a deeply weird way.
Yeah. I mean, if it was before, I feel like to me it makes sense to be after with the actions that take place. But with the location, it also makes sense for it to be before. Because if Dumbledore is continuing across the street... then that brings him face to face with a window.
Oh, the bookstore that he went to before.
Thingy,
yeah.
Uh-huh. And then Credence is still behind him. So with the placements, it could be before, but I don't know.
Oh, or maybe the reaction. So maybe it's before the duel. And so Credence is indeed trying to clear the way because that's his mission. And Dumbledore is realizing that, okay. Credence is really ready to kill random people in the street, so I need to do this weird alternate mirror dimension to protect Berlin, because if we directly fight each other in the streets, it will be bad.
He will kill people.
That's why he walks away, to go across the street and create this mirror dimension. I don't know.
Yeah,
we're trying very hard to understand that.
Good call, cutting this one, WB.
Yeah, no, yeah. This one, I think this one just adds a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next one is called Wands Checked. And this is at the candidates' dinner. We see Jacob and Lolly arrive. A wizard at the door is checking everyone's wands and putting them through this little mechanism thingy. Jacob hands over his wand first, and he says, "It's snakewood, quite rare," still bragging. It's run through the machine and handed back. Lolly hands hers over next. They both go through without incident. Lolly takes Jacob by the elbow and says, "Stick with me." Jacob says something in return, but I couldn't really figure out what it was. But this is presumably like the wand checking machine that the British Ministry of Magic uses in the Harry Potter books, that tells the wand properties and all of that, just to make sure it matches the person carrying it. It's like a form of wizarding ID. Which kind of makes sense now why Jacob needed a wand, because if they were sending him to this dinner and they knew about the security check at the door, they would obviously have to give him a wand to run through this machine. Otherwise, he wasn't getting in.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I don't know why they cut that, because that's very short and and it added more coherence of why he has a wand. But
yeah. One of those scenes that there's not like a lot to discuss about, but it just adds that little extra context.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Although, am I misremembering? Doesn't the wand checking in Order of the Phoenix, right? When Harry and Arthur go to the Ministry.
Yeah.
Doesn't it identify the core?
Yes.
It's interesting then that this one either doesn't identify that Jacobs doesn't have a core, or he's just like, "Oh, this is hollow wand. That's fine. Anyway."
Yeah, I don't know.
Do we? Maybe I don't remember. Do we know that it doesn't have a core?
I thought it didn't, or maybe I'm just making stuff up.
No, maybe it's me who doesn't remember. But yeah,
I don't know if they said that or not either. That might have just been our speculation.
Yeah, it's very possible that I'm just confusing fanon with canon again.
Because I don't remember them saying anything about the core in the movie. Unless it was in like a behind-the-scenes thing.
The wiki says that it does not have a core. I'm looking to see where they get that information from.
From us?
Probably.
Citation. No. Speak Beastie.
No, yeah, they certainly have a source, I guess, but
maybe it's not like the ones that the Ministry uses. Maybe it's more of just like we're gonna identify this to make sure this isn't like stolen or something.
Yeah, maybe,
or it like belongs to someone else.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Let's see here. Yeah, it doesn't have a specific like quote or anything about it, but it does say that it doesn't have a core.
Okay. Hmm. So, listener, if you know
where... Yeah, please speakbeastie@gmail.com.
Okay. So then moving on to what I think might be one of the more interesting deleted scenes that we get.
Yes.
It's called Vogel at Nurmengard. And this happens inside the Nurmengard library/study. There's cheers and yells that we can hear outside the window. Grindelwald enters and says, "Anton, I hope I didn't keep you long." We see Vogel looking quite nervous, and he says, "No, I've only just arrived. I hadn't expected," and he motions to the windows. "It's just, there's so many." Grindelwald says, "Unfortunately, there are those who do not share our cause and would, given the opportunity, do me harm. Hopefully this discourages any such impulse." Vogel says, "Well, it would certainly discourage me. Not that what I would ever..." Grindelwald says, "Of course not, Anton." Does this slow zoom in on their faces. They look at each other. There's awkward, lingering silence. And then Grindelwald says to Rosier, "Is everything ready?" And she just nods her head very slightly.
Yes. I know that.
So... Grindelwald is using a mob as a show of intimidation and power. That's cool.
That's cool. We love that.
Great. I kind of thought this might be taking place right before he announces he's running, like before that car ride he takes through that mob that like then he like body surfs on.
Yeah, I think it's later. I'm not 100% sure, but from the costumes, the light outside, and especially the fact that Grindelwald is rolling up his sleeves, I think it might be just before the Chilling's resurrection scene in the creepy pool. So if I'm right, it's just after the scene outside of the castle where Grindelwald has his little speech for his partisan and he's putting some pressure on Kama before they go to Bhutan. So, I don't have the Blu-ray, so I couldn't find on YouTube the clip of this scene, especially. But the costume and the sleeves roll up, it fits the Killing's resurrection scene. So
that's what I was thinking too, because this is like, I think that's the only time we see. I mean, of course, this is a deleted scene, so who knows? But yeah. that's the only other time we see Vogel and Nurmengard is just before the Chilin gets resurrected.
Oh yeah, he's in the scene. Yeah, you're right. And
I forgot about that.
I didn't check the Rosier dress, but I guess it's the same.
I don't remember.
She's in the dark in this scene, so
I kind of thought like his references to kind of summoning the mob to try and make sure people don't get outraged was to prevent outrage of them announcing that he was going to be a candidate. But yeah, it could make sense with, like you're saying, with the costumes and stuff and Vogel being at Nurmengard. It makes sense with it before that weird swimming pool situation.
It still could be an act of intimidation to prevent people from acting out against him now that he is declared, because he knows that there are people that are actively working against him now that he is declared as a candidate.
That's true. Maybe he like almost summoned this mob to like protect the exterior of Nurmengard.
Yeah, and what is implied in the dialogue is that he has the mob to impress Vogel too. So yeah, I love this scene because that's exactly what I wanted more in the movie. The manipulation, the political game, and it implies that Vogel, I think, got trapped in his own game because, yeah, he might wanted to use Grindelwald and get maybe rid of him once he one day defeated together with the Schilling the other candidates. Or maybe he doesn't know yet the Schilling's plan, because it's after that he realized that Grindelwald is resurrecting a Schilling. But yeah, and now he's scared because he realized that Grindelwald's power is also a big crowd supporting him and very dedicated followers, so he can't have the control of the crowd. So
I'm very curious about Vogel and how he got here. Like, what was his plan?
Yeah.
How did he become aligned with Grindelwald? Like, it's just, I want more of that backstory and information.
Yeah, because that's the only, in the movie, we never see anything like we have in this scene where Vogel is very, in the movie, he seems very confident the whole time with the plan, with his alliance with Grindelwald, and there we see that he's disturbed by what's happening.
The first time we see Vogel, I do get very strong Tony Blair at the beginning of Brexit vibes. But then this movie tries to have it both ways, that he can't just be a bad guy because he's a politician and he's using people, manipulating people for his own ends. He's got to be a bad guy because he's also affiliated with Grindelwald, and there's really no, they don't take any time to reconcile the two.
Yeah. I think it's not a secret that I loved this movie, but one of the things I had an issue with was this Vogel storyline, because I felt like it was just very like, oh, okay, whatever. He's just suddenly like, oh, yeah, Grindelwald can run, even though he's, you know, wanted for all these crimes, whatever. And there's no explanation. And there's not even really much back information on Vogel. It's like you barely even know that his name is Vogel, even though he got his own character poster.
I mean, I had to do all that research for the political episode to even find out that he was the German minister for magic.
Yeah, it's just very odd. And I feel like this scene, had it been included, would have given that storyline and these characters that room to breathe that it needed for me to see a little bit more and understand, okay, this guy might be being manipulated and there's a little more to this than you think there is, because otherwise why would he just randomly be like, yeah, Grindelwald's going to be a candidate, which is what we get in the final cut of this, without seeing any sort of conflict or like character struggle or any sort of reasoning as to why he gets to that point. And while this scene doesn't explain it all fully, there's enough hinted at through the dialogue and through the acting that I feel like it gives it a little bit more substance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because what I was thinking, especially when we did the episode with Chris and getting deep into historical references, and when I realized, when I saw this scene after that, I was, okay, maybe Vogel is trying to use Grindelwald because he knows that he, so he doesn't run for the election for Supreme Mangum to his own succession, but he wants to keep to stay in power. So he needs to have his candidates winning. And that's why he tried to use Grindelwald. He's to have somebody that he thinks he might still be in the shadow, in power, and Grindelwald being his puppet, which is completely stupid of him to think that he could. But that's what I get from just his reaction, like, oh crap, I the crowd is with him, he has I and not with me. So yeah, that's what I get. But, yeah.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
But yeah, very interesting. That's and we the other thing that I like with this scene is that we have this beautiful, we see more the set of this library of Nurmagomed that it's one of my favorite sets of the movie. I find it's so cool. So
yeah,
because we see that set mostly at night, so to see it with more light is really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and because this was my phone background for a while, so I spent a lot of time looking at it. Vinda's character poster is her outfit in this scene, and her background is the library at Nurmagomed. So this was important enough that they made it Vogel's character poster and Vinda's character poster.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I would love to see more of Nurmagomed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's all the deleted scenes. There's a
lot.
No
cut scene with Queenie. I was expecting.
Yeah.
Yeah, really. Yeah. It's just something to give her face turn a little bit more substance.
Yeah, because you know, we got the glimpse of some clips of behind the scenes that we had. She had more scenes with Grindelwald and we didn't have any.
You know, this always happens. They never release all of the deleted scenes.
Of course,
scenes.
Yeah.
Because there are so many from the Harry Potter films that, like, people know were filmed, but we've never seen. And same with this, like, just, and I know Lizzie had talked about, after she talked to that person who saw this in previews, that there seemed to have been other things that did get cut that were filmed and were originally part of the film. And some of those things she had talked about, I didn't see in any of these deleted scenes. So there's definitely more out there.
Huh.
And I wonder when those might get leaked.
So when do we start the hashtag release the, I don't, what would we call it? We can't really call it the Snyder Cut. Release the Cloves Cut? I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, they are still keeping some secrets.
Yeah. Just like a Dumbledore.
Because what was it? Lizzie had said that the person she talked to said that the Chilin killing scene was like way more brutal. Oh. And like they did like tone it down.
That's
for the movie.
Amazing that they made it. That's a toned down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then there was, she had said that that person said that the Phoenix was Fox. So I'm assuming that was referenced in dialogue somewhere, but that's obviously not been released.
Honestly, I'm really, really, really glad about that.
Yeah. They probably realized the mistake and were like, yeah, we can't do that. We're not even going to release that as a deleted scene.
I heard that recently. I wonder if it's still confirmed in quotes in some additional material, I don't know, in books or any content. I heard about that very recently, so I don't,
I don't know. Maybe in that script book.
Yeah, I guess we'll find out on Tuesday.
But there's a lot more content on the DVD other than the deleted scenes that I think we'll probably really dive into as well. A lot of good featurettes on the special features.
Yeah, there's one about the Berlin Ministry of Magic that is just incredible. Like, I'm not going to get too much into it because I don't want to spoil anything, but it's so, like, the amount of thought that went into something that we barely see in the movie is just incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I love the one with the, about the duel between Grindelwald and Dumbledore, because just... Yes. The oldest slow-mo of Mads Mikkelsen dueling is just excellent. But yeah, there is stuff to talk about, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't worry, listeners. We got so much more coming down the pipeline for you.
Yeah, we have time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we have time. All right. Well, thank you, Jerry, for providing a beautiful segue from our owl post into our main discussion. And thank you, Amy, for bringing the thunder as far as the deleted scenes were concerned.
Anytime.
Our podcast question this week is, what deleted scenes were you hoping to see, or what did you learn, or what was your favorite tidbit from what we did get? We would love to hear from you, so you can drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets, pull a Diskid, and comment on the actual post on speakbeastie.com, or email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com. You can also leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever, whatever podcatcher you're using, however you listen. Most places have a review setting. Leave us 5 stars. It helps us pop up in the algorithm and helps us find more interested listeners.
And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at SpeakBeastie, on Facebook at facebook.com/SpeakBeastie, where we can find excellent memes, and on Tumblr at SpeakBeastiePodcast.tumblr.com. And you can support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/SpeakBeastie. We have cool stickers and cool content. And I still need to do content for Patreon. I'm super late. But I have stuff to share. But yeah, I just need to find the time. But I have pictures from my recent visit to the studio tour.
Nice!
Yeah, cool. Because I was at the opening of the Mandrakes and Magical Creature event. And yeah, I tried to find some beastie things. And I will share it on Patreon soon.
Promise. Very cool.
Yeah, and I have something that I'm going to be recording with a friend of the pod, Chris, regarding something that we discussed on the episode 154. That should be fun and deeply nerdy. And also, Shannon has finished the cycle of D&D character sheets that they were doing for the core four. So now I finally have to make good on my promise and hire a DM. So we'll see how that goes.
And for our Patreons for June, you probably have gotten by now a very cool piece of home merch from our graphic designer, Carolyn. And there will be more of that coming. Some great,
it's so cool,
nerdy decor for your house.
And that's it for today.
We're awkward so silences like Grindelwald and Vogel. Just imagine the camera zooming in on our faces.
I'm Marjolaine.
I'm Anne.
And I'm Amy. Case closed.